really to
to
believe in.
It just be something I'll take you, really.
In some ways, it's quite practical and doubts.
I'm just looking at the education test.
He's been doing some work with a law firm recently, and there's a sort of irony there, isn't there, of a lot of the discourse on society is about, in certain quarters, is essentially about, well, get good A-levels, get to a good university, get a good job. And then, of course, in the end, these good jobs turn out to be awful.
Well, I mean, I'd stop you at the good university, actually, because as somebody who moved from, five-star research department in the University of Manchester to the more humble environs of the University of East London, I would contest that whole
set of
assumptions
exactly.
around Oxford's a good university and UEL something different.
But when you look under the hood, particularly from a human perspective, it all looks a bit different to this, I suppose, kind of coddle mainstream perceptions of what.
Well, but I mean, you know, one of my big criticisms of the whole New Labour project was that lifelong learning was plastered all over it, and a load of rhetoric one side, which suggested democratic ideals and, you know, inclusivity and all those sorts of things, and indeed conviviality and, you know, learning for its own sake, and the actual policies that they were pursuing, well, or rather the discourse of successive ministers of education, or people who were in charge of higher education, because those were mostly the ones that I was dealing with. You know, every time they opened their mouth, they gave away the fact that they actually their experience of higher education began and ended with Cambridge, or wherever they happened to do their degree. So David Blunkett went to Birkbeck or somewhere, so at least he had a bit of a sense of adult education.
Mm.
But you know, how dare somebody like Margaret fucking what's her name, MP for Barking, make speeches about providing routes out of, you know, what we need to do is to, I mean, she talks about Mickey Mouse universities at one point, and yes, giving working class kids a ladder of opportunity, you know, take them out of where they're brought up and send them to Oxford and Cambridge, and this is somebody who is supposed to be, I mean, some connection with socialism, I don't understand. Anyway. Don't get me started.
Well,
and I should also say that my level of operation is not, generally speaking, I mean, I'm not a political scientist, I'm not really engaged in those sort of things, but I get so hacked off, particularly talking to people who, you know, been through elite institutions,
trying to make statements
about what's good.
A lot of my reaction to it is personal, in the sense that, yeah, having kicked around lots of university for a long time, there are good things about it, but there are also, in many ways, it's a miserable sort of pigsty of people. Yes, it's not.
Well, it certainly shows
up.
I mean, I think. See, I think one of the things about stuff like Facebook is it really does sort out how handy, how people make the transition into a different kind of paradigm for communication. You know, I'm not a. I have all sorts of publications on aspects of technology, but I'm not a spanner person, I'm not an algebra person, I have to have people to do that for me. But I just get so, well, I've been searching for fellow academics, and people in some cases I worked with 20 years ago I haven't seen since, around things like Facebook. And, you know, whereas all my half illiterate working class cousins back in the West Midlands are all Facebooking away, colleagues I worked with 20 years ago still, you never learned to type because they had secretaries to do it, and not there. And I think, you know, it really sorts that. So I mean,
well, Nuffield College, for example, is the atmosphere is pretty dreadful,
right.
and it definitely reflects a very oddly, it's very elitist, but very positivist kind of social type scientific, slightly autistic kind of mindset, and they're all like that. It's full of economists and.
Yeah.
Social scientists that don't see much
than
power and
money is a social construct.
And
they need to learn that
sort of very basic forms of rationality, really. And they're just not very nice people, actually. That's the weird thing.
So was Zeldin? Anyway. What was Zeldin's chair in? Was it sociology?
History.
History.
Historian.
Well, I came over here because it occurred to me when you said, when you mentioned persons, I had a colleague in Manchester called Ralph Ruddock who died a while ago in his 80s, so sort of contemporary, if you know, he would be old, yeah. It's older than you say, it's in his 70s, so, Ralph would be older, but I was looking for one of his publications, which was based on a series of lecture about the person, or different perspectives on the person for some particular. So if I could lay my hands on this, it may well reference Zeldin's work. That's one of his concepts. But anyway, it would take me a while to scan through this. Quite often I can find things quite nice, which is
So from a practical perspective, what we were thinking about trying to do was in essence a series of, I don't know, say six maybe, because Lewisham is not obviously one thing. It's a series of towns or villages, basically, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Of which Deptford is one coherent entity in a way, and then you've got, I don't know what the other ones are exactly. Forest Hill is that, and I suppose New Cross is this. We were looking towards doing essentially a series of these one-off, to start off with at least, conversation events where we try and get, say, a couple hundred people from all walks of life in an area and just bring them together to introduce them to this method of getting to know someone from a different walk of life. With a view to then potentially creating a portrait of Lewisham, where everyone would have, if they wanted it, a new kind of portrait of them, which allowed them to communicate a bit of how they saw themselves and what they thought was important. In essence, a sort of in-depth Facebook of depth, you'd say, which would stand as a sort of, not exactly artistic, but it would have an element of that sort of arts feel to it, so it would have some kind of wider purpose. It wouldn't seem to be academic research, but then as a resource that people then, such as the council, could actually step in and start to use to interact with their people better, and then using the offline conversations as well. And so talking to Rebecca, who has that, you know, nice venue and does know people, just to perhaps do a 20-person little intro.
Yeah, good
to
idea.
It,
yeah.
Get people to feel, well, is this something we're interested in? Do we like doing this?
So is the idea that
she also has RSVP London, doesn't she?
Yeah,
which is
that's right.
Homegrown network that might be quite adaptable to these sorts of things.
I mean,
it's evolving. We haven't got a master plan that doesn't exist.
But I think quite a few of us have bits of what needs to be put together and maybe made into a jigsaw rather than a master plan. So, I mean, okay, well, what resources are you seeking to make this happen? Do you need participants? Do you need money? Do you need trainers? Do you need, what venues? Well, obviously, you've been talking to Rebecca about the possibility of the railway carriage, so presumably, because that's a possible venue, and it's a good hub, it seems like, of lots of things.
Yeah, in the immediate, so for that, to get, so 20, yes, I'd need to find 20 articulate people, but from diverse origins, walks of life, would be good. We do need some money, but I suppose it's more a question of, and obviously if you know someone with a pot of money.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? I'd have cleaned it out.
Exactly.
A while ago.
But any thoughts about how good ways to fund such a thing?
Right.
In probably a hybrid model. Because
what are the costs
the
involved?
Will probably step
do you have
in.
To, do we have to, or does the operation have to pay you, pay Fields or Zeldin, to pay anybody else? Or is it just covering costs?
To make
costs
it
of,
sustainable, it
yeah.
would. In the immediate future, we just want to do some stuff, really, because I think you have to convince anyone that it's worth bothering with.
Agreed.
But then you're looking at cost at least. Yeah, no one's going to lose money on this stuff.
I think
the council will probably chip in, but they're not going to, they're not likely in the future to cough up for the whole cost of this stuff.
Right.
They want to see other money brought in, or so they're more of a hybrid.
But is the idea that the individual, or the one-to-one conversations which happen in the workshop, that those pairs of people continue the conversation with one another, or that they then, I don't know, spread this method to others, or what?
I suppose the initial event is simply, it's an introduction to a particular kind of method of getting to know
mm-hmm.
another person, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then,
so
worth,
is it like a sort
worthwhile.
Of, is it like barn dance style? So does he actually sort of say, right, stop what you're talking about, shift to something else, or do you?
No, what he does is he has a menu of conversations.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
it's
of course, I forgot. Okay.
But
yeah.
It does work, and it does allow people to get beyond
yeah.
small talk, or just the sort of generic topics that, oh, you're from Deptford, I'm from Deptford, well, let's talk about
yeah.
the economy or
right.
cricket.
Okay.
And it tries to get a bit close to the,
right.
to the person.
So his very specific invention is the menu.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's just sort of profoundly simple
yeah.
idea.
I
mean,
as I say, somebody was doing almost the exact same thing at Burning Man
yeah.
That I participated in.
Well, the School of Life, I don't know if you know the School of Life.
I think I do, but not... well, I think I went looking for it on the internet at one stage and didn't
yeah.
find very much of interest then. But yeah, it
and it's set up very much out of Zeldin-like ideas. I think it was quite inspired by an intimate history of humanity. But he's got no time for the place. It was set up by a guy that did work with him. And it's a sort of shop, apothecary's shop for philosophy.
Where exactly is it? Because I think I've walked past it.
Near Russell Square.
Yeah, I think I've been past it
but
quite recently.
Most people I know who are outside of its criticism of it is that it smells rather like a place for the middle classes to entertain themselves
right.
again, and it doesn't really challenge you to it. So you can go to Heathrow Airport with Alain de Botton and see
good God, I can't I would pay money not to
exactly and see Heathrow Airport through another so it's providing you with little eye-opening experiences if you've got the cash, and who I don't see that as interesting or challenging or really has any future beyond itself, really.
I think it was the last PhD thesis that I examined in the University of Edinburgh, which turned out to be based almost entirely on Alain de Botton. And I had to work so hard at overcoming my prejudice because I thought it was such a mistake that she'd chosen that as a theoretical base.
Wow.
It just seemed so thin.
Not a
philosopher at all, I don't think.
Populist,
but anyway, the point was
yeah.
that she'd made that decision, and I mean, her supervisor hadn't advised her otherwise, so it had to be taken in those terms. But I mean, I think, that's. I learnt most of what I know about his work, apart from, just kind of thumbing through all the extracts, is reading his thesis. And I just think, God, what a charlatan. Really, truly.
So they do conversation dinners there, sort of nicking Theodore's
right.
idea. But again, you sign up, I think it costs you £50, and you go to some fairly twanky restaurant in
mm.
London, and well, who's doing that then? you're going to be talking to someone, maybe just my purchase, but I imagine the people signing up for that are bored doctors, and you'll meet another one.
Well, I mean, it
and it may be something worthwhile.
But I mean, the whole history of adult education is littered with many of those sorts of examples. So, the Open University was intended to be a very broadening or a very to allow access to just about anybody, whereas in fact, certainly for the first 10 years, it was almost entirely, well, the students were almost entirely people who'd been to teacher training college but had not got degrees, but who obviously had a stake in getting a degree. So
yep.
this sort of romantic notion of bus drivers and coal miners, working away in the evening. Well, obviously there are places where that happens, but
yeah.
The WEA and the OU and so on are mostly peopled by people who already have the motivation to go out and seek those kinds of experiences. So certainly, I think if you're talking grassroots, there are not so many instances where that's actually happened. But anyway, interesting territory. This is the book that I was looking for. I'm actually rather proud of that because see how thin it is. Anyway, this is my colleague Ralph Ruddock, and I just flicked through his bibliography, and he hasn't got any mention of Theodore Zelton, but actually I noticed that most of the people he's referenced are either his ex-students or people that he knows personally, so not too surprising.
Those are the topics, actually. That's,
I'd like to
in an intimate history, and obviously he writes from a particular perspective 10 years ago, but I imagine, and he can't, I suppose in a way, he can't help but being himself as a 70-year-old Oxford historian. And he'll come laden with his own quiet prejudices and viewpoint. But
this reads just like Ralph, actually. It really does.
I've turned it into questions.
Yeah.
But the topic list on the front is the topics that...
So are people in Quartus Bank given this manual?
Not given that. They're just... They're given questions
right.
that reflect those topics at the front.
I mean, my... Okay, well,
in
I
fact,
think...
In fact, is that the piece of paper with the topics
conversation
on
there?
And that's the still. There might be a topic there. Anyway, but that's the idea. So then having people who participated in this, the idea is then, I suppose, to get their ideas, perhaps, as much as, or just see where they think this might lead for them, for other people. My idea would be to then facilitate them or make portraits of everybody,
mm-hmm.
which slowly over time build into something which allowed people to get to know one another better.
But you see, I think, well, I don't know. I have to get out of the habits of a lifetime in, you know, a seminar room doing instant critiques of any model going. And no, I mean, I do think that, you know, it's definitely worth having a conversation. But I think the notion of building up portraits of people is when you consider that that's what people are doing for themselves on things like Facebook. So people are choosing, you know, and they're literally creating pictures of themselves through the number of photographs they put up. Lots of people do blogs or, you know, certainly, I mean, one of the things that I've said about Facebook is it's a stalker's paradise. I mean, you know, the amount of information that people put out there about themselves. So actually I find the notion of somebody doing that for other people a bit continuing in that sort of grand Oxford or Cambridge tradition of, you know, the ordinary people being done to. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, exactly. Doing the idea as you do to everyone. Like everyone participates.
So whoever they are, from the mayor down to the homeless person on the high street.
That would be the idea, yeah.
And
so you're creating a more open, sort of open.
So it's a flat sort of thing. But, well, again, I think, you know, I've had lots of, well, quite a lot of what I've written has been about ways of doing research that are action-oriented and democratic. And often when people talk about action research, actually what they mean is, you know, we academics do X and Y, or we come out, we do research. We involve people in grassroots research sometimes, but usually we don't pay them. And, you know, we get most of the payoff from it.
It's not wildly amazing.
So,
is it?
You know, I think action research has to be much more radical than that if it's actually to do something useful. I know, you've been very quiet sitting there with your knitting. What's your reaction to it? Brenda's done loads of, well, I'd say, done some loads of grassroots projects all over, but anyway, what's your thoughts? Your only thoughts?
Oh, it's sort of interesting way of sort of the community engagement policy, isn't it? Really, it's just community engagement is the big thing at the moment, and I think probably with a big society, and big empty society with no policies in it, community engagement exercises, which may or may not be empty, will be very popular and fashionable within the next few years.
Yeah, community engagement. Actually, when was that thing that we went to in Australia? That was in 2001, wasn't it?
Mm.
This was, we went, it's the only time I've gone to gone on a long haul trip like that for a week, and I'll never do it again, but somebody rang me up and said, could I do a keynote speech at a conference in Australia, and I had just a week when I could fit in, and my vanity and my desire to go back to Australia again sufficiently tapped me to go. But anyway, that was a conference run by the University of Queensland in Brisbane, which was called Inside Outside, and was about the University of Brisbane's, well, it was based around their networks and their department, which was responsible for that sort of, those sorts of connections. And again, it's interesting to see how it's done in somewhere like Australia, where obviously the populations are so much more spread, so you have to, you know, think in quite ingenious ways. And the good thing about Deptford is that there's actually, it's a contained, and, and you've got an obvious focal point in the high street, I think, which is, you know, not the case in quite a lot of parts of London.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you then about Deptford a little bit, of your perception of well, one topic is community and the different communities, communities, say, that you're involved in, and the limits opportunities that communities give to people. There's a slight sense out there at the moment that community is a good thing. It doesn't have to be.
Well, I think it's one of those sort of words that's quite hard to use in a pejorative way. So, you know, the terrorist community. it has an implication of, I could say, motherhood and apple pie about it. I think you've got to define pretty clearly what you're talking about. You know, is it community of interest? Is it geographical community, which is much more common in the past, isn't it? I mean, Rod and I edited a book which, as it happens, we were looking at another connection a couple of days ago called, it's about broadcasting, changes in broadcasting, but we've got new community, new technologies, new communities, that was the thing. So it was at the beginning of hundreds of channels of cable TV and people, broadcasters being concerned with narrowcasting and, you know, aiming programmes or communication at smaller groups. But again,
but geographically diverse, in fact what we're looking at is not geographical communities at all, but communities of interest or communities of diversity, which is spread widely around the country or the society. And, you know, the reaction to traditional broadcasting, which is one to many regardless.
So, but you, what you...
Well, the communities I've bumped into, I suppose, of different kinds, just very briefly wandering around Deptford, there's definitely a sense, talking to the Somali young woman, that there clearly is a Somali community that she feels that she's a part of, but it seems to be very much something which is created out of obviously they know each other to some extent, and there's family groups that then know each other, and as they come over, and it's a sort of, partly it's just because that's who they know, but also there's a survival thing going on. The Vietnamese community, again, talking to the shop girl who works in the shop,
right,
seems to be quite similar, quite tight knit. There's a survival element there, but partly linguistic and cultural, and that's just who they know, so that's what they stick with. Possibly there could be issues then there of, well, the second generation, alright, they've got that close-knit sort of survival-based community around them, but then what does that community do for them when they are thinking about leaving it or wanting to move elsewhere in the cultural, economic, social worlds? To what extent does it sort of set them free or constrain them or what to do? And then the other ones that I've bumped into, there's a sense where this sort of RSVP Deptford and this sort of creative business community, or at least network, that does seem to be a bit more than just making money, but nevertheless is very much about interest based, and that's how it links people up. and it's sort of practical and it's skills based. And then there's this sort of arts community, but again, it seems to be quite interest based, quite businessy.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose all communities are interest. There's a logic of interest that runs through them of a kind.
Well, I mean, I think if you were, I don't know, affiliating with a community just out of that you where you had where there was no element of self interest, it's hard to see why you would continue to bother. You know, that you have to be getting something back from your membership of that group, unless
it's
to do with, you know, a religious or a political organisation where you're clearly working for, or you believe yourself to be working for some higher purpose. So I would say that, I mean, most communities are communities of interest in some ways, but increasingly they're not so much based on geography as they used to. However, I think that, well, no, it will be. I don't know what's in things like the plan for London. I've never actually gone and looked at what, you know, Boris Johnson thinks about communities, but it might be interesting to know. And my personal position is that, one, I've always hated commuting. I mean, I have done it a few times in my life, but I always like to live in the area that I'm working in, partly because I don't want to travel far to work. When I was, as I say, doing very senior jobs in the University of East London, I was one, well, it seemed to me obvious that I'd want to live, you know, in the East End. So I was quite shocked by how many people, particularly those who were constantly talking about, you know, working with the grassroots and all the rest of it, lived in NW3. And so, but anyway, we lived in Bow, where we moved, not really knowing anybody apart from the teddy bear maker two doors away, who we'd met through the esoteric art of teddy bear collecting, which we used to be very much
community
more.
First.
Yeah, which is an interesting community of interest too. Anyway, we moved there. We were living on Bow Road. The Mile End Road becomes the Bow Road, which becomes, I don't know,
motorway.
So we lived there, and we had a great house, but you couldn't say there was, I mean, there was no local community in the sense that, you know, living on the main road, there's no, I mean, you'd see some of the same people going to the tube station, but there wasn't anywhere that people congregated. I mean, there was the Roman Road Market, which my mum used to go to several days a week, and Sainsbury's and so on. We moved here on the basis of almost a, not quite a whim, but, you know, a very quick decision based on having sold a house and having to find somewhere quickly and so on. But I love it here. I love South East London now. I never, well, it was 6 years ago, it was completely alien territory, and scarcely, why would you want to go south of the river? But again, I think it's a complicated one where, you know, when I think of the communities or reference groups or other entities, invisible colleges is another one of my key terms. That's the connections that exist between people within a particular academic discipline. So, I mean, I can chart my life in a whole series of those groups, and most of them have very little to do with local geography. So, you know, the community of represented by the British Sociological Association or the Group Relations Training Association or the National Institute of Adult Continuing Education, all of those have been significant in my personal map. I mean, an interesting connection, if you wanted to, I don't know, make a different sort of academic link, is a friend of mine in East London who is Professor of Geoinformation Systems, and he's done loads of work on communities in London based on huge data sets, and looking particularly at, well, one of the last big funded projects he was involved in was looking at different, at the spread of religious observance or membership or affiliation across London. But rather than looking at, you know, how many are Muslims, how many are Hindus, his tools, these are, as I say, it's a large data set man, completely other to me, I do support kind of qualitative work. His work enabled the And I think The Guardian actually reproduced some of these maps looking at the way in which they take a place like Bethnal